The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time to try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, another indictment in the Russia probe.
What it means.
Republicans fight for tax reform.
What's next for a massive tax overhaul bill?
Plus, sexual misconduct allegations force out Matt Lauer.
This is a sad morning here at Today and at NBC News.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn walked into federal court Friday morning pleading guilty to lying to the FBI. The special counsel's office says Flynn lied about his conversations with Russia's ambassador to the U.S. during the presidential transition. Let's talk now with CBS News Justice reporter Paula Reed. Paula, why is this significant?
Well, former Lieutenant General Mike Flynn is the most significant cooperating witness that Robert Mueller has been able to secure so far. And as you noted, he has agreed to plead guilty to making false statements to the FBI. But there was a lot more that Robert Mueller could have charged him with based on all the evidence that has gone before the grand jury about Mike Flynn's lobbying practices and failure to disclose a lot of the income that he received from foreign countries, specifically Turkey and Russia. So the question is, well, why is Mueller willing to overlook that? And the answer is because Mike Flynn is willing to give him some incredibly valuable information. Mike Flynn is going to testify that he met with the Russian ambassador at the direction of the Trump transition team, that he spoke with the senior officials in the Trump transition team, and they told him to go speak with the Russian ambassador specifically about sanctions and how to de-escalate the situation between the U.S. and Russia. This is incredibly significant because this goes to the heart of Mueller's investigation about whether or not the Trump campaign was working with Russia.
CBS News Justice reporter Paula Reed. Thanks, Paula.
Thank you.
The White House says this clears the way for a prompt and reasonable conclusion. Republicans getting closer to passing tax reform.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that he has the 50 Republicans vote needed to pass the tax reform bill, with Vice President Pence standing by as a potential tiebreaker. One of the holdouts on the bill, Arizona Senator Jeff Flake, he wanted a deal to enact fair and permanent immigration protections for so-called Dreamers under the DACA program. Once the Senate approves the tax bill, it will be reconciled with the House version and could be headed for the president's signature before the end of the year. Bill Rakoff, CBS News, Washington.
Republicans also hope to pass two short-term spending bills to keep the government open through the holidays as a funding deadline approaches.
With the shutdown deadline a week from Friday, the president said Republicans and Democrats aren't even close to a deal to keep agencies funded.
Well, we are very far apart because our views on crime and our views on immigration and the military, so many are different.
Democrats skipped a session between the president and top congressional Republicans, saying it would be a show meeting. That after Mr. Trump tweeted he didn't see a deal. Chuck Schumer accused the president of operating in bad faith.
These issues are far too serious for these kinds of games.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, the White House.
Growing pressure on Michigan Congressman John Conyers to resign.
Congressman John Conyers has been hospitalized with what his family says is a stress-related illness.
Shortness of breath, chest pains.
Pressure is building on the congressman to step down amidst allegations of sexual misconduct. Conyers' longtime friend and colleague, Congressman James Clyburn, joined House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi in calling on the Michigan Democrat to resign.
I pray for Congressman Conyers and his family and wish them well. However, Congressman Conyers should resign.
But Conyers' attorney says he has no intention of quitting.
Nancy Pelosi did not elect the congressman, and she sure as hell won't be the one to tell the congressman to leave.
At least two former female staffers have broken their silence with claims Congressman Conyers sexually harassed them.
He asked me to satisfy him sexually. He pointed to areas of genital areas of his body and asked me to, touch it.
House Speaker Paul Ryan said he watched Marion Brown's interview on television.
No one should have to go through something like that, let alone here in Congress. So, yes, I think he should resign. I think he should resign immediately.
Brown says she settled a claim with Conyers over the allegations. Conyers denies any wrongdoing. Weijia Jiang, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Minnesota Democrat Senator Al Franken apologized for past sexual misconduct Monday.
It's going to take a long time for me to regain people's trust, but I hope that starting work today that I can start to do that.
Matt Lauer has apologized after NBC News fired the Today Show anchor following sexual misconduct accusations. In a statement, he said some of those allegations were false or mischaracterized, but there's enough that is true to make him feel embarrassed or ashamed. More from CBS News correspondent Bianca Golodriga.
This is a sad morning here at Today and at NBC News.
Matt Lauer's co-host found out about his firing just hours before going on the air. A source at NBC says the network fired him at 10 p.m. the previous night. In an email to staff, NBC News Chairman Andy Lack cited a detailed complaint from a colleague about inappropriate sexual behavior. NBC later said it started during the 2014 Sochi Olympics and continued in the workplace after the Games.
He really used his power in these situations.
Elizabeth Wagmeister and Raman Satuta spent 2 months investigating Lauer's conduct for Variety magazine. Among the allegations they uncovered, he allegedly dropped his pants in front of an employee and reprimanded her for not engaging in a sexual act. In a separate investigation, a woman told the New York Times Lauer sexually assaulted her in his office until she passed out with her pants pulled halfway down.
According to our sources, it wasn't just low-level employees that had knowledge of Matt Lauer's inappropriate conduct with women. There were also higher-level employees that were aware and openly speaking about Matt Lauer's conduct with other women at the Today Show.
In a statement, the network said prior to Monday night, current NBC News management was never made aware of any complaints about Matt Lauer's conduct.
This is Today.
He joined Katie Couric as co-host of Today in 1997.
And I want to say I'm looking forward to working with you.
She joked about his behavior in a 2012 interview.
What is Matt's most annoying habit?
He pinches me on the ass a lot.
Wow!
TMZ posted video that appears to show Lauer speaking to a different co-anchor, Meredith Vieira, as she bent down in front of him.
Pretty sweater. Keep bending over like that. It's a nice view.
President Trump says his administration's approach to North Korea hasn't changed despite an intercontinental ballistic missile launch by the rogue country. It landed into waters off Japan. North Korea says it can now fire missiles that can reach the mainland U.S. Correspondent Mola Lenghi has more on how the U.S. is responding at the U.N.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, issued a dire warning to the Security Council Wednesday following North Korea's latest missile launch.
If war does come, it will be because of continued acts of aggression. And if war comes, make no mistake, the North Korean regime will be utterly destroyed.
The representative from South Korea looked on as Haley urged immediate action to stop Kim Jong-un's nuclear ambitions.
Today, we call on all nations to cut off all ties with North Korea.
Still to come, the Secretary of State responds to reports his job's on the line.
It's laughable.
That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson responded Friday to reports the White House is planning to replace him.
It's laughable. It's laughable.
Reports say CIA Director Mike Pompeo may replace Tillerson. It's unclear, though, exactly who'd take over the CIA. More from CBS's Kylie Atwood.
CBS has learned that there are a number of names under consideration, and one of those is U.S. Senator Tom Cotton, who is seen as an ally with President Trump. And there's also the former U.S. Deputy Commander of Central Command, Robert Harward.
A federal judge has sided with the White House, refusing to block the president's choice to temporarily run the nation's top consumer financial watchdog. the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, OMB Director Mick Mulvaney took over for the Trump administration Monday.
Mick Mulvaney, President Trump's acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, brought donuts for his new staff. In a bureau-wide email, he encouraged them to say hello and grab one, and to disregard any instructions from the other acting director, Leandra English, who sent around her own staff email. English also met with Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, who spearheaded the creation of the CFPB in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. English was appointed to head the agency on Friday by the outgoing Obama-appointed director, Richard Cordray.
The law says that I shall appoint a deputy director. I did that before I departed.
President Trump has consistently criticized the Bureau. Since its inception, the CFPB has been a punching bag for Republicans who say it saddled banks with unnecessary regulations. It oversees financial institutions and has refunded nearly $12 billion to tens of millions of consumers.
The Bureau has been aggressive in its enforcement. Its highest profile case was last year against Wells Fargo. The CFPB fined the bank $100 million for opening millions of unauthorized bank accounts and credit cards. Juliana Goldman, CBS News, The White House.
President Trump called a San Francisco jury's decision to acquit an illegal immigrant of murder a disgrace. Jose Ines Garcia Zarate was charged with killing Kate Steinle in 2015. More from correspondent John Blackstone in San Francisco.
Outside the courtroom, the killing of Kate Steinle was all about illegal immigration and sanctuary cities like here in San Francisco. But inside the courtroom, the only thing at issue was whether Steinle's killing was intentional or a tragic accident.
Following the not guilty verdict, defense attorney Matt Gonzalez condemned the way the case had been politicized by President Trump and Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
And they may themselves soon avail themselves of the presumption of innocence and the beyond a reasonable doubt standard.
The president used the killing as a case against sanctuary cities that refused to cooperate with federal authorities on immigration laws. Tampa police say they've arrested a serial killer.
Victims' relatives embraced after Tampa Police Chief Brian Dugan announced the arrest that had eluded investigators for 51 days.
This is the man who did this.
Police arrested 24-year-old Howell Donaldson at this McDonald's in Ybor City after an employee alerted them to a handgun inside a food bag Donaldson asked her to look after.
He admitted that he owned the gun, but he did not admit to the murders.
Police say Donaldson terrorized the Seminole Heights neighborhood of Tampa, killing four people since October. Benjamin Mitchell, Monica Hoffa, Anthony Naboa, and Ronald Felton.
FBI!
Officers flooded the streets with few clues, except the surveillance video. Investigators say they have found a hoodie similar to the one seen in Donaldson's car. What still confounds police and people here is the lack of a clear motive. For Monica Hoffa's uncle Robert, relief over the arrest is enough for now.
It's like having somebody sit on your chest for 51 days and you're not breathing. And this 52nd day, we take your first breath of air.
Police say Donaldson did not live in the Seminole Heights neighborhood and at this point has no known connections here. Residents say they'll be able to sleep well for the first time in nearly 2 months. Manuel Bajorquez, CBS News, Tampa.
A desperate search for missing 3-year-old girl Mariah Woods.
Authorities in Jacksonville, North Carolina have deployed canine units on the ground and helicopters in the sky. Onslow County Sheriff Hans Miller.
Our focus right now is to find her, to bring her back, and then to find out what happened.
Mariah's mother, Christy Woods, says she last saw Mariah around 11 p.m. Sunday.
Please bring her back, and I love her. I'll do anything that I can, whatever you want.
She said her boyfriend saw Mariah again around midnight when the child got up and he told her to go back to bed. The next morning, she was nowhere to be found. Alex Woods is Mariah's biological father.
She didn't cry. She didn't scream. Nobody heard nothing. Four people in the house, two adults and two kids, and somebody just comes up and snatches the baby up and walks out.
Mariah's mother is now begging the public for any information that could help bring Mariah safely back home.
She's got the personality of make you laugh. She's goofy, outgoing, talkative. She knows how to make your day brighter. And people that are here looking for her love her to death.
Authorities say there was no sign of forced entry, but the back door was unlocked. DeMarco Morgan, CBS News, Jacksonville, North Carolina.
An unusual gallery at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City is provoking some strong reactions. The artists, suspected terrorists, held at Guantanamo Bay.
Most of the works don't directly express the pain of imprisonment.
The serene images are a far cry from life in captivity at Guantanamo Bay. Many are seascapes painted by accused terrorists, men who haven't actually seen the ocean for years.
Some people are angry that the art does what they think is glorifying terrorism, and I try to explain to them that that's not my goal at all.
Curator Aaron Thompson believes the art provides insights into the effects of long-term confinement at the military prison. Every artist is a current or former detainee working with scraps of material they gathered in their cells.
It's made out of cardboard, of pieces of old t-shirts stiffened with glue. The rigging is from the netting inside of the prayer caps he's given.
This one is painted on a mixture of gravel and glue.
Whether you believe these men are guilty or innocent, these paintings are windows to their souls.
So on September 11th, we had a pretty darn good glimpse of their souls, what their souls are about.
Michael Burke's brother, New York Fire Captain William Burke, was killed in the North Tower that day.
I don't think we need to see their watercolors to get an idea, a better idea of what their souls are about.
Captain Burke's name is inscribed on a memorial just a few floors below the art of suspected Al-Qaeda operatives. The Defense Department considers the art government property, which it has the right to destroy. Burke thinks it simply needs to be balanced with images from the 9/11 attacks.
Let's show the people trapped at the 100 stories in the air with the flames and smoke behind them, people tumbling through the air.
Burke calls the show an outrage, but Thompson says it's simply a form of communication from men who have no other contact with the outside world. Kenneth Craig, CBS News, New York.
Up next, think planning a wedding is tough? Try being a royal on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Holiday business gifting season is fast approaching. This year, choose gifts that are simple to give and a joy to get. Choose Omaha Steaks. There's a huge variety, from premium steaks to skillet meals. There's free shipping on most packages, and all gifts are 100% guaranteed. Be confident in your gift choice. You can never start too early. Contact Omaha Steaks today. Enjoy special holiday pricing on the perfect business gift. It's an ideal holiday gift for your clients, employees, or partners. The perfect business gift includes 4 bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks, 4 Omaha Steak burgers, 4 gourmet franks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 free caramel apple tartlets, plus you'll get free shipping. This exclusive holiday gift package is only $59.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type nation in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, visit omahasteaks.com and enter code nation in the search bar to send or experience this exclusive gift package for only $59.99. And it ships free.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. British politicians are hammering President Trump for his retweet of several anti-Muslim videos.
British Prime Minister Theresa May arrived in Jordan on a three-day Mideast tour meant to bolster ties with the region. But at her first press conference, British journalists were primarily interested in her thoughts on President Trump's retweets of inflammatory anti-Muslim videos posted by a far-right group called Britain First.
I'm very clear that retweeting from Britain First was the wrong thing to do.
Her comments come after her office said the same thing, to which President Trump pushed back, tweeting, "Don't focus on me, focus on the destructive radical Islamic terrorism that is taking place within the United Kingdom. We are doing just fine." Britain's ambassador to the U.S. brought up concerns about the retweet at the White House Wednesday, explaining that Britain First is a hate group. Trump has since removed the videos from his Twitter account, which have been criticized for not being what they claim to be. Without defending the videos, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders pointed to a general threat of Islamic terrorism.
Whether it's a real video, the threat is real, and that is what the president is talking about.
May acknowledged Britain has to contend with threats not only from Muslim extremists, but from the far right. And she says she's not afraid to tell her friends when they are wrong.
This is a long-term special relationship that we have. It's an enduring relationship that is there because it is in both our national interests.
In Parliament, some lawmakers called for the Prime Minister to withdraw her invitation to President Trump for a state visit. Tina Krause, CBS News, London.
A royal wedding is being planned for Britain's Prince Harry and American Meghan Markle. Correspondent Charlie Daggett has a look at the royal wedding.
500-year-old St. George's Chapel set in the sprawling grounds of Windsor Castle. But it's kind of like the private family church. It's where Harry was baptized, where his father Charles and stepmother Camilla held their blessing ceremony after a civil marriage in 2005. The palace has agreed to foot the bill for pretty much everything. The church service, music, flowers, and the decorations, even the reception. And Markle has already spent time with the woman who signs the checks.
Have you met the Queen?
I have, yes.
A couple of times.
What was that like? A couple of times. It's incredible. I think, you know, to be able to meet her through his lens, not just with his honor and respect for her as the monarch, but the love that he has for her as his grandmother.
But while most brides marry into the family, Markle is marrying into a country. And for a prince to marry a divorcee reflects the evolving attitudes towards divorce in the royal family. After all, the queen wouldn't be queen if her uncle, King Edward VIII, hadn't abdicated the throne in 1936 to marry another American divorcee, Wallace Simpson. Royal correspondent Roya Nika.
Our next king and queen are both divorced. Charles was able to divorce his first wife and marry his second wife, who is also divorced. He has not had to give up his claim to the throne. Divorce simply is not the taboo it was in the royal family 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Now, the guest list, there are only 800 seats inside that chapel. One person who's certain to be there, the person who set Harry and Meghan up on that blind date, her identity is still being kept secret. Charlie Daggett, CBS News, Windsor, England.
We marked World AIDS Day Friday as researchers make a discovery.
A drug used to treat lung, kidney, and skin cancer has reportedly eradicated HIV cells in a patient with the AIDS virus. Doctors in France say a man given the FDA-approved drug Opdivo had a drastic and persistent decrease in the reservoirs of cells where HIV hides. These reservoirs can't be reached with standard antiretroviral treatments. Experts say they're excited by the discovery, but urge caution. The drug did not have a similar effect on another HIV patient. Larry Miller, CBS News.
Dutch prosecutors have opened an investigation into the public suicide of a convicted Bosnian Croat war criminal who drank poison in court at the Yugoslav War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague. Lauren Comito reports from Amsterdam.
Dutch prosecutors say the tribunal asked them to investigate the death of Slobodan Praljak, who managed to smuggle some kind of poison into a high-security courtroom and drink it during a public, televised hearing. He died later in a local hospital. Prosecutors say they will focus on assisted suicide and violations of the Medicine Act to determine if he had any outside help obtaining the substance, which they said contained a deadly chemical. An autopsy is expected shortly. Many Bosnian Croats are already declaring Praljak a hero. Lauren Comito, CBS News, Amsterdam.
A newly revealed incident reported by a U.S. government employee at the American Embassy in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, is raising suspicions about Russia's possible role in attacks targeting diplomats in Cuba. It involves a USAID officer and his wife, according to a source. The husband and wife were flown out of Tashkent, Uzbekistan's capital, by the State Department for evaluation, according to a source. Their current medical condition is unclear. Two U.S. security sources say Russia may be involved in that incident and in the sonic attacks in Cuba.
The Russians have the means, the motive, and the opportunity.
Foreign policy professor William Liogrand says Russian President Vladimir Putin has been trying to exert his nation's influence abroad.
Seems that this all began just around the same time that President Obama expelled 35 Russian diplomats because of Russia's interference in our election.
Victims of the attacks in Cuba describe hearing a loud, high-pitched sound in unusual places, often in their homes. The Associated Press obtained this recording. Two dozen confirmed victims face a range of health issues, including hearing loss and mild traumatic brain damage. An American tourist staying at the Hotel Capri in 2014 suspects he too suffered a sonic attack and described the sensation.
went from the tip of my toes, through my toes, down through the arch of my foot and up to my ankles. And I could feel a little bit in my fingertips.
When asked about the latest case in Uzbekistan, the State Department told CBS News, "We ensure our personnel are examined and receive appropriate treatment." Following our report, spokeswoman Heather Nauert tweeted, "There has been no incident in Uzbekistan."
There was not an interest on the part of the U.S. government in having this go public. They don't know if something happened just yet.
USAID, an independent federal agency, referred all our questions to the State Department. Russia has denied any involvement in the attacks in Cuba. Bali is still dealing with a dangerous and disruptive volcano that may erupt soon. Here's the BBC's Rebecca Henschke.
Mount Agung is sending out thick clouds of ash, smoke and gas behind me with increasing intensity. We've been able to see a red glow of the lava in the crater. A sign volcanologists say that the molten and lava has risen to the top and shows that a full-scale eruption could be soon. The government has told people to get out from an area, 12-kilometer radius area, saying it's no longer safe.
Coming up on the weekend roundup, why the skies may not be so friendly to Christmas flyers.
And who's going to fly us home and to our families?
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Bad timing for American Airlines. A scheduling glitch allowed too many pilots time off over Christmas. Transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve explains.
Thousands of holiday travelers are hoping for a Christmas miracle after the union representing American Airlines' 15,000 pilots warned a looming pilot shortage could ground flights around the country.
It's super stressful. I mean, when your flight plans don't work out, you're kind of left stranded.
It's not fair. And who's going to fly us home and to our families, you know?
Henry Hartevelt is an airline analyst.
This was a terrible screw-up by American Airlines. It was a programming mistake.
Pilots normally bid for flight assignments every month. The computer glitch allowed them to drop their scheduled flights during the holidays without confirming another pilot was available. As a result, thousands of flights were left unstaffed. American declined to go on camera, saying in a statement, "We have reserve pilots to help cover, and we are paying pilots who pick up certain open trips 150% of their hourly rate."
Obviously, American does not want to be the airline equivalent of Scrooge and cancel a lot of people's vacations.
Still, the pilots' union has lodged a protest against the airline's proposed fix, saying its terms violate the current labor contract. Captain Dennis Tager.
It's going to require some unique thinking and some unusual arrangements, perhaps. But none of that can happen until we are actually able to sit down and talk about it.
American says only a few hundred of its flights late this month remain without pilots scheduled to fly the plane. Larry Maggot is our technology consultant. He's on the line from Silicon Valley. Hi, Larry.
Hey, how you doing?
So let's talk about the hottest tech this year. What should we expect this holiday season?
Well, we're going to see a lot of 4K TVs, and they've gotten very inexpensive now. I wouldn't go out and buy one to replace the excellent 1080p high-def TV I have, but I think that many people who have an intention of buying a new TV are going to wind up with 4K ultra-high resolution. You may or may not see the difference, but it's there. Wireless headphones and earbuds are popular, and more so thanks to Apple and other companies getting rid of the headphone jack on their phone, so you kind of have to have a wireless device. Also, IoT, Internet of Things, we're going to see a lot of everything from light bulbs to door locks to anything that automates your home, turning things on and off. And then, of course, there are huge sales on these internet appliances or things like the Amazon Echo and the Google Home, voice activated. They can play music. They can play podcasts. And, of course, they work with IoT, so you can use your voice to turn things on and off.
So automation is here to stay.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking of automation, robots. I don't think we're going to see too many of the Rosie the Robot humanistic-looking creatures running around, but a lot of people are going for these vacuum cleaners and floor sweepers and other devices that can do at least some tasks in the home. And they're basically a harbinger of things to come. These things like the Roomba are primitive in terms of what's going to eventually be available, but they are out there, and I think people are buying them for the holidays.
What about the popularity of drones? Has that crested?
I think it probably has. I think, look, drones are going to get better and cheaper. But on the other hand, there's so many more restrictions on where you can fly them. And for good reason, you don't want them crashing into aircraft or dropping into the ground or spying on people's backyards. So because of that, I think that there's not quite the enthusiasm that there once was. But again, as they get better, as they get better software that makes them safer, perhaps we'll see them reemerge as a big category again.
What about safety concerns with those Internet of Things things? Should parents be concerned?
Yeah, one of the things that concerns me are these high-tech toys like the Barbie dolls and other toys where they not only talk to you, but they listen. You can have a conversation with one of these toys, and they're actually, in many cases, recording the child's voice, sending it up to a server, not so that staff people from these companies can sit there and listen and spy on the kid, but so that they can develop better software for voice recognition. But in the meantime, your child is, I wouldn't say being spied on, but potentially what your child says could theoretically get into somebody's hands. And that should concern parents.
CBS News technology consultant Larry Magid, thanks for talking with us, Larry.
Thanks, Steve.
It won't be a happy holiday for many families in Texas still awaiting Hurricane Harvey disaster relief.
I thought somebody would help, and I got nothing.
29 inches of water flooded Jackie Bailey's Houston area home during Hurricane Harvey in August. When Bailey's daughter Geneva helped her apply for $400 in assistance from the Red Cross, she found out they were denied over text message.
People are going to say, well, it's just $400. It's not going to make or break you. But no. Is there more than that?
It's the thought. You know, the thought that people are going to help you. But there was no help.
You got your own sweaty right there.
Earlier this month, Texas Governor Greg Abbott expressed his own worries over Red Cross funds raised to help Harvey victims. Abbott told reporters he was concerned Harvey relief was not getting into the hands of the people who need it. The governor's office confirms to CBS News they've met with Red Cross officials as part of an ongoing process to make sure Texans are getting the help they deserve. During an August interview on CBS This Morning, Red Cross CEO and President Gail McGovern defended the organization's spending.
We keep our overhead low.
Red Cross says 91 cents of every dollar donated goes to help victims.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that.
Governor Abbott and the Baileys aren't alone in their concerns. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley criticized the Red Cross's response to the 2010 earthquake in Haiti that killed more than 300,000 people. In a 2016 memo, Grassley claimed the Red Cross spent one-fourth of the $487.6 million raised on administrative fees. He also accused the organization of trying to quash a congressional watchdog review of its practices. The Red Cross told us it strongly disagrees with Grassley's report. The Red Cross says it's distributed more than $229 million in financial assistance to Harvey victims, more than half of what was donated. Another $45 million was spent on providing meals, shelter, and health services.
We're very transparent in the data, how much we've raised.
Harvey Johnson is Senior Vice President for Disaster Cycle Services at the Red Cross.
What factors would make you not eligible for that $400 award?
We had to live within the 41 declared counties, and we ask a few pretty simple questions. Were you severely impacted by the disaster? Were you displaced for 3 days or more? If you were less than 3 days, you wouldn't qualify.
The Red Cross says they've handed out emergency funds to more than 500,000 households like this one, still recovering from the effects of Hurricane Harvey. The homeowner that received the $400 tells us it was a lifeline.
There's not much left of anything.
4 feet of water flooded Teresa Martin's home. She applied for help from the Red Cross and received $400 in cash.
How important was that $400?
Well, every little bit helps. I mean, it buys groceries.
The grandmother of 11 is living in this trailer while her house is repaired.
Are you going to have a Christmas tree in here?
No.
You're not going to have a Christmas
tree? Where am I going to put it?
My husband just built this.
The Baileys never found out why they didn't qualify, but told us they only left home for 2 days because they were worried about looting.
Why were you hurt when you got denied?
Because it made me feel like I didn't suffer. I didn't have a storm. I didn't lose my stuff. Like I wasn't worthy.
That's Omar Villafranco reporting. Coming up, what's next for the evening news?
I think you'll see this broadcast anchored remotely more often.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
What makes a holiday card unforgettable? Personality. And no one makes it easier or more affordable to create a holiday card full of personality than Vistaprint. Right now, get 50% off all custom holiday cards. That means 30 cards start at less than $15. With hundreds of stunning designs, your personality will shine through with every card you send. Just go to Vistaprint.com today and enter the promo code HOLIDAY to get 50% off all custom holiday cards. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code HOLIDAY.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The President and First Lady lit up the White House Christmas tree out back on the Ellipse Thursday.
Melania and I are full of joy at the start of this very blessed season. We're thrilled to think of the people across the nation and all across the continent whose spirits are lifted by the miracle of Christmas.
Across town, it may be one of the most unusual holiday displays in Washington at the U.S. Botanic Garden. It features 40 different roadside attractions from around the U.S., each made only of plant parts. Some of the most iconic ones, South Dakota's Corn Palace and Water Towers, honoring peaches, tea, and coffee. Garden spokesman Devin Dotson says the exhibit still features wreaths, exotic orchids, and poinsettias as a celebration of plants.
Plants are a huge part of many of the holidays here in the United States. We talk about trees and different types that are great for decorating and holding plants and our decorations, how to take care of them, but also things like poinsettias and Christmas cactus. And so we show you all different varieties.
It goes through New Year's Day. It's an exciting time here at CBS News as Jeff Glore takes over the reins of the CBS Evening News. Jeff joins us on the Weekend Roundup from New York. Thanks for talking with us, Jeff.
Sure. Good to be here.
Yeah, following the footsteps, as you know, of many great anchors of this broadcast. Anthony Mason has been filling in before that, Scott Pelley. It was a bit of a messy departure when Scott left. What was your reaction to that?
My reaction was that I was still reporting to work every day and doing the best I could. I had a great visit, lunch, and conversation with Scott just after I took over. It was announced that I was going to take over this job. He was extraordinarily generous with his time and his advice, and that was hugely meaningful to me.
What kind of advice did he give you for leading this broadcast?
I don't want to share all of that. What it was a personal conversation, but I will tell you that everything he told me was very helpful. And I will say all of the folks who have had had anchor jobs like this on a national network level, who I've reached out to, have been extraordinarily generous with their time.
How do you see this newscast being different in a realm now that is dominated by so many other shows and broadcasts that compete?
I think we want to be on the road as much as possible. We want to respond to breaking news as aggressively as possible. I think you'll see this broadcast anchored remotely more often. I understand this is a challenging time. I also understand that there's, for me, there's even more opportunities. We can be seen in more places than ever, whether that's a TV screen, whether it's a smartphone, whether it's an iPad, whether it's a computer screen. And so for me, that's pretty appealing.
What does the evening news need to focus on?
News. Hard news. Facts.
I mean, it's been focusing on hard news for a long time. Is there something that you think it needs to shine a greater light on?
I think that there's an opportunity for us to do some longer form reporting and to take some deeper dives into some issues when possible. I've been lucky enough to do some of these longer stories for CBS This Morning quite a bit over the past couple of years and for the evening news. Both broadcasts have done that. I think if we can continue to focus on that, these are stories that take commitments. They take they take financial commitments and time commitments. But in the end, I think they can pay off for us and viewers.
We broadcast the show from Washington. Washington often leads the evening news across the board on many channels. How do you see the future of Washington coverage on this broadcast?
Well, Washington is not just an important part of our broadcast. On some nights, it is the entire broadcast. I understand that. It was why I got down to our D.C. bureau as quickly as possible. After this was announced, we are building a new bureau down there, as you know, which will open in the spring. I am excited about that. I hope we'll get a chance to anchor this broadcast. I know we'll get a chance to anchor this broadcast from D.C. more often. The broadcast is, emanates from New York City. But as you know, and as everyone else knows,
the beating heart of this organization and CBS News is in our bureaus around the country and with our producers and correspondents, and D.C.'s the biggest one.
New CBS Evening News anchor Jeff Glor, congratulations, we're rooting for you.
Thanks, Steve.
Finally this weekend, let's talk murder, as we often do. Getting a look at what's on tap with 48 Hours. Correspondent Peter Van Sant joins us on the weekend roundup. Peter, you've got a story called The Psychiatrist and the Selfie. What happened?
Well, back in November 12, 2012, a mentally troubled man named Jake Nolan goes into the office of a prominent New York City psychiatrist named Dr. Michael Weiss, and he's got a duffel bag, and inside that duffel bag is a 10-pound sledgehammer, some zip ties, and a knife. And he waits for a patient to leave Michael Weiss's office. He pulls out the sledgehammer and attacks Michael Weiss. They end up having this battle, deadly battle, that both of them thought the other would be killed. They both got wounded, cut, hit Michael Weiss with the sledgehammer. They end up out in a hallway, both of them lying bleeding in the hallway. And Jake Nolan, the attacker, pulls out his cell phone and takes a selfie, and he sends a text message to another psychiatrist in New York, the former partner of Michael Weiss, a psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Pamela Bookbinder. The two of them, Weiss and Bookbinder, had been having a custody fight over their baby boy, and this picture is sent out, this selfie that basically says, here I am, now what? And Jake Nolan is arrested. Investigators discover the night before the attack that Pamela Bookbinder bought with Jake. It's on video at a Home Depot, a 10-pound sledgehammer and these zip ties. And she had drawn him a map of the office where Michael Weiss had his practice and his apartment. And Jake Nolan is arrested. He is tried. He is convicted, sentenced to 9.5 years in prison. But at the end of the first hour we did on this investigative story, he says there's one person left that should be prosecuted, and that's Pamela Bookbinder. Well, in October, late October, almost within 24 hours of the statute of limitations running out on this crime, Dr. Bookbinder was arrested in New York and paraded before cameras, and now she is awaiting trial, most likely in 2018.
An unusual case. Correspondent Peter Van Sant. Catch him on 48 Hours this weekend or streaming on CBS All Access. Good talking to you again, Peter.
Thanks, Steve.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your story ideas, chain letters, love letters, whatever. To Weekend Roundup at CBSNews.com. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and now Spotify. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Dory Valerio is the production assistant in New York. Alyssa Rashaw is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.